Welcome to the Dirt Show, brought to you by Pulver's Towing. And today we're going to get a racing history lesson from Wisconsin's racing legend, Tom Bigelow. We'll also hear from Tom Wagaman from Ogilvy Raceway and our old friend Speed from Cookies Barbecue Sauces and Seasonings right after a few words from our sponsors.
Honda has found a way to make the great outdoors even greater with special offers on some of our best ATV, Pioneer, and Talon models. Find one with the power to take on your biggest jobs and adventures and get an awesome deal, like up to $1,400 factory to dealer incentives on select models. Just head to Trimble Cycle Center in Austin now during the Greater Outdoor Sales Event and make this your best year outdoors yet. Factory to dealer incentives are good with select and unregistered models. See dealer for complete program details. Trimble Cycle Center in Austin, celebrating 60 years as USA's second oldest Honda dealer.
Simply adding Cookies barbecue sauce is sure to make meat taste better. But when you really want to hit a home run, try one of my approved recipes. Speed the Sauce Man here, and I've got a bunch of easy-to-make creations at cookiesbbq.com. Barbecue meatloaf, Grandma Elmo's broiler burgers, heck, I'll even tell you the secret to Speed's racks of ribs. It's all at cookiesbbq.com. Hey, smart cookies use Cookies barbecue sauce. Anything less is meat abuse.
Pulver Motor Service is far more than towing and recovery. Pulver has the versatility and tools to move anything with wheels. Why should you invest in a truck and trailer when for a fraction of the cost, Pulver can move your heavy equipment to the job site and back? With our years of experience and investment in equipment, Pulver Motor Service isn't limited by size, weight, or distance. See for yourself at pulvermotorservice.com. Contact us today and find out how we can help move your business forward.
Company vehicles get a workout and they also see a lot of road miles. Midwest Collision in Faribault knows that the more those company vehicles are on the road, the more chances things can happen. Contact Bob today at Midwest Collision and set up a program for your fleet to get back to looking like a fleet you can be proud to own. Contact Midwest Collision in Faribault today for all your fleet body work or collision needs.
Coles Electric in Owatonna is there whether it's a small or large project with state-of-the-art technology ensuring a professional job will be done every time. Coles Electric services include new construction, design and build, lighting design and installation, remodel work, high voltage, and PLCs. Coles other services include generator sales, security systems, infrared cameras, directional boring systems, underground trenching, plowing, cable location, vacuum excavation, pole setting, boom truck, and 24-hour on-call emergency service. That's Coles Electric in Owatonna. Licensed, bonded, insured, and offering free estimates.
For over 95 years, Napa Auto Parts has been there for you, supplying quality parts and expert advice to help keep your vehicle running strong. If it's time to do some overdue maintenance on your vehicle, farm equipment, or boat, Napa is here to help. You can order your parts online ahead of time and pick them up curbside, and Napa stores are sanitized with proper social distancing. With locations throughout the listening area, you're never far from a Napa store. Napa, a proud member of the local community.
Hey, this is Dave from Severson Oil, VP Racing Fuels, and you're listening to the Driver Segment on The Dirt Show.
Welcome back to the Driver Segment here on The Dirt Show, and I am joined by racing legend Tom Bigelow. And Tom, you were born in 1939 in Elkhorn, Wisconsin. What was it like growing up in a small Wisconsin town during that period of time?
Well, it was really great. You know, actually, I lived closer to Whitewater. The hospital was in Elkhorn, and it was really nice. My grandpa had a farm there, just a couple hundred acres, dairy farm. And, you know, growing up on a farm was a nice place. You learned how to work hard, you know, and stay out of trouble. Of course, you never had time to get in trouble on a farm. There was something to do. But that was really a nice area.
At what point in your life did you realize the famed Angel Park Raceway was just a little over an hour north of where you lived?
Well, actually, when I was 12 years old, I listened to the Indianapolis 500 on the radio, and I told my mother, I'm going to drive there someday. That's something I want to do. I had a brother-in-law that liked building race cars, and we built little go-karts. Well, they weren't even existing at that time, but little go-karts, and we had a track out behind the barn, and that's where I got started racing, that little racetrack there. I had two brother-in-laws that built that, and, you know, I'd go out there and was running around and We had a couple little go-karts, had a motorcycle, and then my brother-in-law bought a 49 Ford that was hitting the rear end, and we shortened it up. We brought the wheelbase right up behind the front seat, and boy, that short wheelbase really taught you how to handle a car, and that's kind of how I got started racing. Then, looking at Sun Prairie, Wisconsin, Angel Park, they run midgets there. I went up there a couple times and watched them, and I said, oh boy, you know, this is it. That's going to be my thing.
You actually began your racing career at Jefferson in Cambridge, Wisconsin in 1956, and you had a rough start to your first season in stock cars.
Being young, you look at racing, you watch them, Nick, it's nothing. You just get out there and stand on the gas, turn the steering wheel, go in circles, and I found out that year there's a lot more to racing than just doing that. You have to learn how to control that car. It took me all year to finally figure that out, and in the 14 competitive races I run that year, I flipped that car 16 different times. I think that's still a record that stands there at Jefferson Speedway.
Your second year of racing was 1957, and you switched to midgets. How did that all come about?
Well, I had several people in Whitewater that raced, Gary Condon, Dick Jones, and Dick Jones had a midget. He got a ride with another guy, so he said, hey, if you want to run my car, why, you know, I'll let you drive it. And so I did, and that kind of got me going. But I realized that, you know, you had to take it easy and learn how to drive that car so that you didn't flip and crash. And I got started there, and we started running really good and started winning some heats and then winning a semi and then finally making the feature. And getting going, you just realize that you got to really learn how to drive this car. We went to Jefferson Speedway early in the year and done some testing, and I'd spin out, and they'd just push me off and spin out again, and he'd push me off, and finally, you know, you go in the corner and you get that slide going and learn how to control the gas and steer it, and I said, wow, this is really neat. Then I'm driving this car. From then on, it really got going. Then you get up to Sun Prairie, Wisconsin, Angel Park, and that is a super fast racetrack, really a nice facility, and I think anybody that can go up there and run well can go about anywhere and race. It's a track that when you learn on the different corners and the D-shaped size that it is, why, you get a lot of speed and you got to learn how to control that car. And that's how I really got going.
I've got a really great picture of a number two midget that you drove. What a nice looking car during that era.
Yeah, that was. It was a Studebaker car owned by Ernie Fredrickson out of Milwaukee. And that was really another good learning curve. You know, I've had super good owners that through the years, you make a mistake and they'll say, well, you know, what are you going to do to correct this, or what do you think we should do? And you'd say, well, maybe we should have more stagger or change the weight or do this. And they'd say, well, you know, we can try that, but that's not what's going to make you go faster. And a couple times I just set the car up and, boy, what a disaster that was. And come in and the owners would say, oh, well, that wasn't the right way, was it? And I said, no, why didn't you tell me? And they say, well, you'll never forget this. And that's one way that I've learned how to set cars up and make them go good.
I grew up watching Carl Fenske, who raced a 57 Chevy. The car was actually a convertible with a hardtop welded on, so he had the X-frame underneath the car for extra strength. You had a 57 Chevy convertible that was virtually new back in that era.
Yeah, that was. I had a friend that had bought a new 57 Chevy convertible and had the misfortune of getting caught drinking and driving and lost his license. And one day he said, hey, you know, I'm not going to be able to drive this for a year. I hate to see it set. And I don't want to make the payments. He said, if you make the payments, you can take the car over. So that was really great, you know, being 18 years old, having a 57 Chevy convertible. What a car that was. It was really nice having that.
And you lived in a college town, too.
Yeah, I did. It was always nice taking that convertible and driving around the town, you know, with the top down and whistling at all the girls and having them wave at you. It was really a nice thing for a 17, 18-year-old kid.
You drove a sprint car for Rich Brock and Don Prelip out of Algona and Renwick, Iowa, at the Winter Nationals in Tampa, Florida, and your crew had great success.
Yeah, we did. They were really good owners, you know. They loved racing, and getting down there and running with IMCA was a lot of fun. You know, what great guys they were. I think one's a farmer, and the other one was had cattle trucks. But, you know, they had the money to do it and really wanted to do it, and running and winning with them was a lot of fun.
You also took that car out to Terre Haute. You qualified it for the Little 500 in Anderson in third, and you also went and did some test and tune at Winchester all in one trip.
Yeah, that was really a fun weekend. You know, you get to go to different tracks, and then qualifying for that Little 500 was outstanding. That's still a fabulous event. We go every year. The owner, Rick, is a super good friend, and Rick Dawson just, you know, is always glad. I was, just been there every year. So then coming to Winchester, oh, what a place that is. And that's where I live now. It is the world's fastest half mile. Right now, sprint cars are getting around there in 12 seconds. I had fast time there at 15.03, and I thought that was flying. But without a wing, that was. Nowadays, with the wings, they go a lot faster, but that was quite an experience I had with Brock and Prelip, because I'd never been on a high bank track like that before. And boy, you know, there you start going fast and you just learn a lot in a short time.
Those quality local sprint car rides were very sought after by drivers like yourself, Lee Kunzman, Gordon Woolley, and many others, because they were the stepping stones to get to USAC, which at that time also led directly to IndyCar rides.
Yes, that's very true. You know, in running IMCA, Jerry Reichert and Scratch Daniels, right there from Minneapolis in that area, were super good friends and taught me a lot when I was first getting going, you know, coming to Winchester. Well, they both come down and say, you know, you need to do this, and you should slow down a little more going in the corner and make some adjustments, and really helped me get going. And those are the guys that you never forget. Used to see them both at the Hall of Fame in Knoxville, Iowa, when we would go out there. Of course, Jerry Reichert's passed away, but Scratch Daniels still comes down, and it's a lot of fun getting with those guys. You know, if you're running good, owners are looking usually if their driver is getting a little older, or some of the owners drove themselves and then they're looking for a younger guy. And I always done pretty well, and I think that's what got the eye of other owners to hire you.
Tom, you mentioned Jerry and Scratch, and I know a lot of the listeners have memories of watching Tom Bigelow at the Minnesota State Fair. What are some of your memories of running that event?
Oh, boy. What a racetrack that was, you know. Blacktop, I loved running the pavement, because on dirt you can make a mistake and people say, wow, you look fabulous down there. They didn't realize you were out of control and just happened to be lucky. But running the pavement in Minneapolis there at the fairgrounds was just the racetrack I fell in love with. We won midget races there. I won champ dirt car races there. And also there's a dirt track just outside of St. Paul that I run a 100-lap modified race and won that. That was back about 69, I guess. But I really fell in love with that place. And then running with, you know, all the USAC guys and the local guys up there, it was really a lot of fun, especially when you beat them.
You also drove the famous number 55 Elder Cadillac sprint car. I had a chance to meet Bob Elder at the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum. What a great car with a lot of history.
Yes, Elder was a great sponsor, but Knepper was that owned the car. Junior Knepper was just a super car owner too. And Bob, once we got to running good and winning, he'd say, boy, you guys need a new tire, or you need this. He was a super good sponsor. I started running midgets for Knepper in 1971. We won several races on half miles, and on every track the midgets run on that year, over a half mile, we won. We set a couple of track records doing it, and that's what got Rolla Volstead watching and got interested in me, because we were winning on these big tracks, and IndyCars run on the big tracks, and so that's how we got acquainted.
You also drove the A.J. Watson Lodestar Special Ford for 4 years from 1974 to 78. Those were beautiful machines.
Yes, that was a fabulous car, owned by Ralph Wilkie, Cedar Cards out of Milwaukee. I run his midget several different times all over. We set a couple of records at Angel Park in Sun Prairie. A.J. Watson was the mechanic, and, you know, a little story going to Minneapolis when they were taking the Champ dirt cars up there. Wilkie, the owner, said, there's no sense in going. You know, our car doesn't have the horsepower with that four-cam Ford as the Chevys do, and we just won't look good. But A.J. Watson was a persistent guy. He said, hey, we'll go do our best. We're up pretty good in points, so we need to go run. Well, when we got up there, the owner, Ralph, he kind of stayed up in the stands and watched practice. We were second quick in practice, and he come down and after practice and said, wow, you know, we aren't doing too bad. Maybe we better get set up a little better, or maybe we can do good. Well, we qualified second, and at the beginning of that race, we fell back to like fifth, and as we kept going, the track kind of got slick, and the Chevys with their horsepower, the guys started spinning tires, and we just kept chugging away, and on lap 70, we moved up high and went up and took the lead and went on to win. And after the race, he said, boy, was I ever wrong about this. We run here, we'll always be back.
For a young boy from a small town in Wisconsin, what was it like for you the very first time you saw the Indianapolis Motor Speedway? Bobby Unser said, as a young boy coming up from Albuquerque, New Mexico, he said it was an unbelievable experience for him.
Oh, yes. I always said, you know, I'm never going to that race till I can run it. And I got there in 1970 with Ray Smith. He had a Chevy-powered car, and we could never get it going. But, boy, what an experience when you do get out on that racetrack. I was fortunate to have an old-timer, Maury Rose, take me out on there for a little show-and-tell, as he called it. And he said, you know, we're out here now on the beginning of the month. Nobody's in the stands. You go down the front straightaway here, and it looks wide open down there. But he said, come practice days, especially when it comes to qualifying weekend, and all these people get in there, and the whole outlook is different. As you come out of number four heading down there, it looks like that whole straightaway just gets to be a little funnel down there, and you're probably going to back off the gas and lose some speed. And he was very true. That first time I ever went out there to qualify, you know, you come out of there and all them people in the stands, boy, that's a little scary driving down there, because all month long you're used to seeing this wide open and the color of the stands. And then when the people get in there, the color changes and the whole outlook of that corner changes dramatically. And it takes a little bit of getting used to that.
In 1982, you ran a Gurney Eagle at the Indy 500. I just finished reading a book on All-American Racing and Dan Gurney. Many critics said those cars were over-engineered. What was your opinion of the car?
Well, I thought that was fabulous when I first got into that, because I was driving another car there. And boy, getting out of that Lola into Dan Gurney's car, and they were both Chevy-powered, I couldn't get that other car up to speed. When the Hall brothers bought that Eagle, they asked me if I'd just go test drive it first. They wanted to make sure it could run quick enough. Well, I think on the fourth lap, we were running fast enough to qualify. And I thought, boy, I come in, and they said, wow, this is fabulous, you know. I said, well, how fast were they running? I think back then I was running like 188 in my car, and we'd have to run over 190 to make the race, and that fourth lap in that car was 194. So, you know, the speed was just there. That car was good. But Dan come down there right away with his mechanics, and said, you know, we got a few adjustments to do to this, and I'm sure you're going to feel more comfortable. That was just one supercar.
A person cannot research the Indy 500 and not read about Roelof Alsted. There is a great photo of the Bryant Heating and Cooling number 27 Indy car with you and Rolla. What was that experience like working with him?
He was a fabulous owner, you know. Going to the Speedway for the first time to really try to make the race was great because Rolla really had the experience and a lot of backing. Bryant Heating and Cooling was a great sponsor. He had good mechanics, built his own engines. Well, he built his own cars, so he really knew what it would take to make a chassis handle at Indianapolis and kind of how to handle a rookie. And he really done a super job with me and being very patient, begin learning curve of what to do. And during practice, I had the misfortune of crashing in turn one, and the backup car was on its way from Portland out here and didn't get here for a couple days after the crash. But Rolla said, you know, we'll get the car, we'll rebuild it, and we'll get out there and do our best, and we did.
This season, we opened up with Al Unser. Al said he bumps into tourists in New Mexico all the time that asks him, you raced at the Indy 500? Al says, yep. They ask, you actually won it? Yep, I did, a couple of times. You race for almost 50 years. Do you run into people now that have forgotten the incredible accomplishments of Tom Bigelow?
Well, that's amazing. You know, you go places. I was in Florida just last winter and in a restaurant eating, and this couple come up, and the guy looked at me kind of funny, and they walked on by, and then pretty soon he comes back. When we got done eating, we were getting up ready to leave, and he said, excuse me. You know, he said, are you Tom Bigelow? And I said, well, yes. And he said, well, my wife and I have been sitting over there watching you and your wife. And he said, I'm sure that's who that is. And it's amazing the places you go. People come up and want autographs and the different things that you do. I try never to turn anybody down and always shake their hand when they do come up because it's amazing. We still get letters from people overseas, many different countries. During the month of May, in fact, I just sent one back to New Zealand. People wanting your autograph, they get the pictures of the cars and send them over asking us to sign them. And us write them a little note and send it back thanking them. It's really neat. I did have the third largest fan club going back in those days, and, you know, it was only a couple of guys that people hear about, you know, A.J. Foyt and Richard Petty that were ahead of us. And it's really nice to have all those fans. We used to send the birthday card out to every one of them on their birthday, and I just got a card the other day from a guy who said, you know, you sent this to me back in the 70s, and I still got it, a birthday card he wanted me to sign again. That really helped also with the fan base of getting people to follow you.
Dave Darlan's quest to surpass your USAC National Sprint Car all-time win record of 52 that held up for years and years. You were actually there the night he broke your all-time win record.
Yes, I was at Kokomo. Well, I went to like two or three races before that thinking he probably would break it. Dick Jordan with USAC asked me if I'd come and give him the trophy the night that he did it. And I did that, and Dave and I have been friends for years. In fact, when I quit driving for Dick Hammond and Galen Fox in the number 56 Genesee beer car, he started driving for them. So, you know, I've known Dave for many years, watched him over the years. He's a super good guy. We were just at a meeting here, a little function, 2 months ago maybe, and people were asking me what I thought about that. I said, well, Dave's a good driver. It took him 33 years to do what I did in 13, and they just got a big kick out of that.
To me, that was a really great time for many fans to relive stories about your great career, and it brought your name back to the forefront of the racing news.
Yes, I get called all the time to go speak at different functions and banquets. And in fact, we were just out at the Winchester Speedway this last week here, giving the champion of the modified deals a trophy, and we been good friends with them for many years, and I like going to those races. And Bob Lemons has been a driver who everybody thought, well, you know, he's kind of blind in one eye, but he's a very good driver, smart, and that's what makes a good champion. And that's something, you know, with anybody coming up, you just got to be persistent and have that will and desire to keep going, no matter what. You know, there's times that I know we couldn't win a race, but I never give up because you never know what might happen.
I think Dave Darlin is a lot like you, a grassroots, hard-nosed racer who worked for everything he got. The all-time win torch could not have passed to a better ambassador for the sport of sprint car racing.
Oh, no, I told the fans that night, you know, if anybody was going to beat me, I'm glad it was Dave, because he takes the times with the race fans, he goes to these functions, and he's a good ambassador for racing, and I was very tickled to see him win that.
Well, you were racking up your win total, the talent you raced against every single night, racking up those sprint car and midget wins. There is a video playing in the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum of a Winchester race announcing the drivers to the crowd. Rich Vogler, Poncho Carter, Johnny Parsons Jr., and yourself, and many, many more. Every single win was against the country's best talent.
Yes, you know, there was one win there. In fact, my 50th win, I beat Gary Bettenhausen. And, you know, Gary said later, well, I never should have let you win that, but I kept driving into the corner underneath him, just into turn one every time, just a little harder. I knew I couldn't pass him down there, but I was hoping that I'd make him make the mistake that he says he never makes, and that's pull down to block me. When we come down for the white flag that day, I thought, well, I'm going to drive around the outside because I just had the feeling he would move down. And I tell everybody, you know, if he wouldn't have moved down, it would have been the damnedest crash they ever seen at Winchester. But he pulled down just, you know, maybe a car length and a half off from the wall, and that was just enough. And when he did that, I had the momentum going that I zipped around up high, and he knew I had him, and he just let me go. And we did have a lot of good race drivers back then, you know, the Voglers. Richie's dad, Don Vogler, really helped me a lot in my younger career. I run for him, oh gosh, time and time again. NASCAR promoted some midget races down in Daytona, and they would run all week, and then on Saturday night, they had a winner's take all race, and the 2 years that we run down there, we won both of those. And Don Vogler, the first year I was in his car, and the next year I was in Gillis's car, but Don Vogler was the mechanic on it. And it's amazing. Richie Vogler is an outstanding driver, has been a good friend, was a good friend all through the years. And it's a shame that, you know, drivers still lose their lives in these things, but Richie and I turned out to be good friends over the years.
You were inducted into the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum in 1996. What did that recognition from your peers mean to you?
That was really great. Being inducted into that Hall of Fame was nice. It just shows that your peers still kind of look at you and remember you, and it's great going back there every year and seeing all the different drivers that we used to run with running at Knoxville, Iowa. A little story about Knoxville as we're getting along here near the end of my career. I went out there, and I used to run IMCA sprints with Merle Heath, and Mel Moffitt was our sponsor, and Mel owned a speed shop in Davenport. He built this modified, and he asked me if I wanted to drive it, and I said, oh, I'd love to, and Merle Heath was kind of the mechanic on it, and we went out there to Knoxville the first time, and he said, boy, this is a super fast place. You know, if we can just make the feature way, we'll be doing good. And we went out there, we had third quick time, and led the race with four laps to go, blew the motor. And Mel, after the race, he said, boy, that's great. You know, he said, I'll build a new motor, and we'll get this thing going better. He said, what can I do to compensate for this? I said, well, if we can come back and win a couple more races, how about a new set of mag wheels for my station wagon? Because I said, I really like them. So he said, okay, well, we went back the next week and won it. Then the next week, Jerry Blundy beat us by just a little bit. we went back the next week and won it again, and he said, here's your set of mag wheels. He said, you know, it's really great. I loved that racetrack. It reminded me a lot of Sun Prairie. So when we got there, why, I just really took to it, and it was great running that place.
The video of you driving around Winchester Speedway in your vehicle, giving the passenger a lesson in what was the best lines to run, what a great video, and it really showcases the banking of that speedway.
Yes, we just took some people out last week at this function we were at Saturday, and a couple of gals, and I love taking people for a ride around there. I used to take them for a ride in my van. And sitting up kind of high in that, I'd go real slow up in turn one and almost stop. And people get panicky when they get up there because it feels like it's going to tip over. Then you take off and start building up speed, and you get up to like 70, 80 miles an hour, and gosh, it doesn't feel like there's any bank in that track at all. The car just kind of settles into it, and you go around. In fact, I took a couple from Florida around there, and when we got all done and pulled back down low, she got out and she said, I'm going to tell you, mister, when you pulled up there and stopped, I almost wet my bottom. It's been a lot of fun taking people around Winchester Speedway. It's been a lot of fun racing there. And it's just one of them outstanding tracks that you really like.
What is the most memorable win of your career?
Oh, the most memorable win. Well, there's really several. I guess it's kind of hard to pinpoint any one because I loved winning on all kinds of different racetracks. Of course, winning at Winchester was always great. I'm the second winningest driver out there, winning over at Eldora Speedway in Rossburg, Ohio on that high bank dirt. That's a fabulous place, and that's where I won my first sprint car race. Maybe that's one that you remember. You always remember your first win, like in USAC. It goes on to many different wins, but, you know, it's really hard to pinpoint. I've been asked that question many times. But I loved winning on all different kinds of tracks, the mile dirts, short tracks, whatever you were running.
Tom, thank you so much for the great history lesson on open wheel racing and everything you did throughout your career. And thank you so much for taking the time to be with us here on The Dirt Show.
Well, I want all your listeners, you know, there's a Tom Bigelow still running. It's my grandson. He said, I'm the younger, better-looking Tom Bigelow. He would love to get up and break and set new records, but like I tell him, you know, you got to have a grandpa that's got a lot of money or somebody behind you, and it's a lot of fun watching him. I love to go and watch and help him, but I want to thank all the fans that are listening. You know, there's so many good fans up in that area that we really want to thank you guys for supporting auto racing. And please keep going to these short tracks because they're just fabulous racing, good guys trying to make it to something big.
Tom, thank you for being with us.
It's my pleasure, Clayne. Thank you very much.
One of our brand new items for 2019, we're very excited to unleash our new 3D printed plastic trickery to our line. First part in that line is our new Raceiver mounts. They're available for the Fusion or Element, and you can tie strap them to a roll bar, or we have a flat mount that you can pop rivet to your interior tin or the side of your helmet, or you can Velcro it. One of the nice features of having it on your helmet instead of being on your seatbelt or to a tube is you can get out in a hurry and not have to worry about where your Raceiver is or being tied down to your belts or tied down to a tube. It's real nice to have it on the side of your helmet so you can get out of the car very fast. And as always, check us out online at weirdsmachine.com. Thank you.
Let me tell you, friends, about our store. It's a great place we call Miner's Outdoor.
Miner's Outdoor, your total source Husqvarna dealer in Blooming Prairie, has everything your yard needs. From chainsaws, leaf blowers, and weed trimmers to zero-turn mowers and everything in between. That's what being your Husqvarna total source dealer is all about. Stop in today to see the best selection in quality Husqvarna outdoor power equipment. That's Miner's Outdoor, Highway 218, Blooming Prairie.
Miner's Outdoor, Major Tough.
If you're in need of a worry-free power lift door, then you'll want to stop and talk with Rod French. Make a statement with a Powerlift architectural door on your home or cabin. Powerlift doors can be retrofitted to fit an existing door opening or designed into your next commercial, agricultural, livestock, or aircraft hangar build. Stylish, functional, and built to last. Powerlift doors by French's Manufacturing are made locally in Dodge Center, Minnesota by their experienced craftsmen. Contact Kelly or Rod. Powerlift doors by French's Manufacturing. 374-9306.
Why would you use anything but the latest technology and packing products when it comes to shipping your business products? Foamcraft Packaging in Owatonna provides a complete line of packaging materials, including foam products, pallets, crates, corrugated boxes, and much, much more. See all our different packaging options at foamcraftpackaging.com or call 455-2893. That's 455-2893.
Wolf & Sons Yard Service has heavy equipment. This is Scott Wolf. Whether you need a basement dug, a building removed, footings for a remodel, an RV, camper, or boat pad, rock, sand, or dirt hauled, or even a driveway or parking lot road graded, call 455-3524.
Arrow Race Wheels was established on the conviction that its dedicated staff could provide higher quality wheels designed specifically to endure the tough requirements and conditions of the racing industry. Most importantly, the wheels need to be manufactured and sold, maintaining an affordable price structure. Arrow Racing Wheels has become the largest premier steel wheel supplier, and their product line speaks for itself. Upgrade your racing game today at arrowracewheels.com.
Welcome back to a special segment here on The Dirt Show, and I am joined by Tom Wagaman from Ogilvie Raceway. And Tom, Friday night, May 15th, it was your son Clayton's birthday, and the family made a trip to Mississippi Thunder Speedway to watch him race. What was that whole experience like for your family to get out and actually enjoy some racing?
Gosh, I wish it was better than it was, but it was great. We were happy just to be out. We struggled with the race car a bit. It got better throughout the night, but just being able to go out and see some people and be around people, Bob got a racetrack open. I'm just happy to be able to go to a racetrack that's open right now.
How tough has it been for you knowing Wisconsin is open to race? Iowa has been running for a few weeks pay-per-view, and now I just heard as of June 1st we'll be able to open 50% capacity. South Dakota has also been racing pay-per-view, Jackson Motorplex with the World of Outlaws, and we still have to remain closed here in Minnesota.
Ooh, it sounds like a political nightmare to me. I'm going to try not to throw the governor under the bus at the same time as I'm thinking we should be open. We've held off better than everybody else, but that's also putting us way behind the eight ball financially-wise. As much as frustrating as it is to not be able to be open, it's still impossible for me to go, oh, I know everything about this stuff. We'd be fine to be open. It's a double-edged sword there. If I say something, I'd like to be politically incorrect, too. But I can't, you know, because I don't know either. But I don't see anything happening to these other tracks. I don't see any outbreaks. And, yeah, it's extremely frustrating. We're clumped in concerts, the NBA. There's no reason that an outdoor track should be clumped in with them people. Churches are finally getting to be open now. And I know we can do things way safer than them places. And I know we can open up and be way safer than the Walmarts. So, yeah, it's frustrating.
I'm sure you've also had no lack of opinion and ideas from all kinds of people, but it's a whole lot easier to say things when it's not your facility or your profit margin that's on the line.
Yes, and the profit margin is almost secondary, but yet you can't look at today. You got to look at today, tomorrow, the next day, 5 years from now. It'd be an easy deal if you didn't have a community. Our community up there at Ogilvie, they support the heck out of us. I keep saying we're in a honeymoon period, but it's been quite a while now we've been in a honeymoon period because our locals are so good to us that it's ridiculous. So we worry about them, and there's times that they are worried about this, about the COVID. So we have to keep them in our thoughts at the same time as we're thinking, are we going to be able to survive this? So it's everybody. It's the racers. It's the community. It's all of us. Yeah, we got, 379 people in that community. That's a pretty small little place. So when we open up 5, 6, 7 times the amount that live there. So, yeah, they want us to open, but yet at the same point, it's an older community too. So The longer it goes, the more we learn, but I wish I wouldn't have learned this much. I'd rather it be going right now, there's no doubt.
Drivers love Ogilvie Raceway. They comment on the facility, they comment on the owners, they comment on the track surface. The Wagaman family has really put something together, a formula that really works.
That's pretty easy. My mom and dad are unreal. That part's an easy part. We bought a facility because the manager there, Nate Fisher, said, if you guys just let me do my thing, we'll be all right. And he was right. He puts on a good race surface every week. Do we need to change this? Do we need to change that? And we try to give him what he asked for. And the drivers tell us what to give him. So that's kind of the, if there's such a secret, that's our secret, is provide a good, if these guys are rock stars, we're giving them a good stage. And that's our goal.
At what point do we get to the part of the summer where the tracks start drawing the line and say, if we can't be open and operating with fans, concessions, beer sales, and regular racing, then it makes more financial sense to stay closed until 2021.
There is a lot of tracks that have reached that point already or are really close to reaching that point. We're not one of them. Ogilvie's going to open up as soon as possible, whether we're going to lose some money on a pay-per-view or not. Kind of where we're at this point. That stuff can change, obviously, but we want to be racing.
What is the best way to keep up to date on the latest breaking information on Ogilvie Raceway?
You can obviously go to ogilvieracing.com, go on to our Facebook or Instagram, but I'll tell you what, the minute we know something's going to happen, I will try to make sure everybody knows something's going to happen. That's our goal. We don't want to be waiting with major concert venues that it makes no sense. So contact your legislatures and talk to your senators, talk to everybody, and start leaning on the governor that we got to open. Things aren't going to be any better if we don't open, I'll tell you. At least that's my opinion, of course.
Tom, thanks for everything you do to keep the racing fires burning. And thank you so much for everything you do up at Ogilvie Raceway. It is a first-class facility, and everybody talks about it when they're on the show. And thanks for being with us here on The Dirt Show.
Well, I really appreciate it. And thanks for giving me a call and a chance to be on.
Winning drivers rely on VP Racing Fuels to optimize performance. Now get the same benefit with VP Matatives, offering race fuel technology for your daily driver. Increase fuel mileage and restore power to your streetcar with VP's fuel system cleaner. Or give your race car a boost with VP's Octanium, improving your fuel's octane by up to 8 numbers and giving you the throttle response your performance car was built to deliver. That's VP Matatives, available at your local AutoZone store or at vpracingfuels.com.
Rhino Ag Equipment is used in agriculture, commercial or industrial mowing applications, landscape preparation, roadside maintenance, and many other farm and ranch applications. With 0% financing for 48 months for qualified buyers, now is the time to take home a Rhino. Find a Rhino Ag dealer near you at rhinoag.com.
Gilland Enterprises is your local distributor of Justice Brothers products. Justice Brothers products reduce breakage, downtime, and increase machinery reliability, life, and performance, which increases your profits. Superior lubricants like JB80 and JB Heavy Duty Chain Lubricants are made for today's farm equipment. This family-owned America's brand for quality products has provided additives, lubricants, and cleaner to auto enthusiasts, racers, truckers, industries, and farmers for more than 80 years. Contact Gilland Enterprises, your local Justice Brothers Car Care Products distributor at 952-934-7354 or visit justicebrothers.com. Go with the winner. Gilland Enterprises and Justice Brothers.
Fast Shafts has been producing drive shafts for late models, modifieds, dirt trucks, stock cars, and hobby stocks since 1992. Fast Shafts, the official drive shaft for the U.S. MTS and USRA, and title sponsors for the IMCA Fast Shafts All-Star Race and IMCA Super Nationals, support the sport of circle track racing throughout the USA. To get the power from your motor to the tires, run with a proven winner today with the number one choice in carbon fiber, steel, chrome moly, and aluminum drive shafts. Call Fast Shafts today. Made by racers for racers. 800-622-6617.
Extreme! Extreme! Powder coating!
Why choose powder coating over liquid paint finishes? Maximum durability. Extreme powder coatings offer a scientific process that uses heat to bake the colorful finish deep into your product. Extreme powder coatings can deliver multimedia blasting, impact-resistant epoxy primers, and super durable powder coat applications to meet your needs. Visit ExtremePowderCoating.net for more information. Extreme Powder
Coating. Race fans, the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum is open 7 days a week, year-round. But you don't have to drive to Knoxville, Iowa to shop in our museum store, which features the world's largest selection of sprint car merchandise. Visit us online at sprintcarstuff.com for a great assortment of books, including Bill Haglund's newest book, Two Lane Roads and County Fairs, or The History of Knoxville Raceway and the Marion County Fairgrounds by Bob Wilson, or Nebraska Dirt by Bob Mays. You'll find all of these books and many more at SprintCarStuff.com, along with a great variety of racing DVDs and more sprint car merchandise than you could ever imagine, all at SprintCarStuff.com. So the next time you're in Knoxville, stop by the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum, and the next time you're at home or away from home, visit us online at SprintCarStuff.com.
Welcome back to a special segment brought to you by Cookies Barbecue Sauces and Seasonings and Speed. Many people think corned beef and cabbage is only for St. Paddy's Day, but I really love corned beef and cabbage, and you can make it year-round.
Oh, geez, yeah, you bet, Clayne. And I'll tell you what, our store here in town, Jamboree Foods, that Rob and Cindy Gurman run it, they run special on some corned beef that they had $1.99 a pound. It was ridiculously cheap. I mean, normally you're $3.99, $4.99 a pound. They had this for $1.99 a pound, so I bought several. One of them I took and just threw in the crock pot. I always like to use those liners in those crock pots because, boy, it just makes clean up such a snap. I just threw the corned beef out of the package and the juice, and then most of them come with a little spice package that I throw down in there with it. Then I'll throw in about, probably a cup or so of, I prefer if I can, get a real dark beer. Throw that in there with it in the morning and just turn it on low, put the lid on it, and walk away and forget about it, and then figure on having it that supper, that day for supper. I guess some people in the city have dinner in the evening, but us country folks still eat supper at night. And then what you want to do about 3-4 o'clock, let's say you plan on eating at 5:30 or 6, but 3-4 o'clock, just take a head of cabbage. And I tell you what really goes good is if you get some of that purple or red cabbage, I always call it purple cabbage, but just cut the core out of it, but cut it into wedges and throw that down in there around that corned beef that's cooking in that crock pot. And then that cabbage will get nice and tender and seasoned with the juice from that corned beef, then that dark beer. Oh, boy, that is really tasty. It's so easy. And of course, also, you know, corned beef, if you don't want to do it with cabbage, it just pull it out and let it cool a little bit, and then make sure you slice it across the grain. Makes for some great Reuben sandwiches.
Speed, if Dirt Show listeners would like more information on any recipes they've heard on the show, getting a cookbook, maybe even an autographed one, or asking you something about cooking, they can always email you, correct?
Yep. They can just email me, just Speed, S-P-E-E-D, at Cookies, C-O-O-K-I-E-S, BBQ.com, or go to our website, which is www.cookiesbbq.com.
Speed, thanks for the great recipe, and thank you for being with us here on The Dirt Show.
You betcha. Have a good one, Clayne. See you, buddy.
Founded by Jesse Olson in 2004, Medieval Chassis was formed to fulfill a need for better engineered race cars. Medieval Chassis' new state-of-the-art facility has made it a leader in the stock car racing industry and two-time IMCA national champions. The use of a fiber tube laser, CNC tube bender, and flat laser allows Medieval Chassis to engineer and develop a chassis that exceeds all others in performance and adjustability. Find out more today at MedievalChassis.com.
Byers Engine Service of Rochester opened its doors in 1975. Hi, this is Corey. Since 1975, we've been offering complete engine machining services and assembly. From flatheads to big blocks, Y-blocks to drag race engines, and street rods to pulling tractors. Plus, Byers Engine Service offers complete dyno service. So if your race car or street car is a little under the hood, Trust the place who's been there since 1975. Contact Byers Engine Service at 507-282-5586.
The difference between a Hitchman fire suit and others? The difference is safety. All Hitchman fire suits are made with materials that are permanently fire resistant. That's why Nomex remains the standard. The difference is experience and innovation. Hitchman started the racing suit industry over 80 years ago. The difference is quality, value, and customer service. Your suit is an investment in your safety, and Hitchman is committed to giving you the safest and best racing suit, along with friendly personal service. Hitchman, why settle for anything less?
Have you ever been stuck? I mean, really stuck. This is Darcy from Pulver Towing. Over the years, we've been called to fields and job sites where they've spent days trying to free a piece of equipment from the muck. If you don't have time to wait, call Pulver Towing. Our towing experts will have you out in hours instead of days. With locations in Rochester, Worthington, Fulda, and Marshall, if you're stuck, call Pulver Towing today.
Welcome to the Dirt Track segment, brought to you by Cookies, Sauces, and Seasonings.
Last Thursday night, they were racing at Kossuth County Speedway in Algona, Iowa, in the Hobby Stock A-Main. Zach Schmidt over Josh Seidels. In the A-Modified A-Main, Cody Connect over Austin Wolf. In the Sport Compacts, it was Katie DeVries over Lucas Parsons. In the B-Mods, Jared Baumeister over Matthew Loaf. And in the Stock Cars, Jeffrey Larson over Devin Smith. Hamilton County Speedway in Webster City, Iowa was also running last Thursday, May 21st, in the USRA B-Mod A-Main, Jim Chisholm over Ty Griffith. In the USRA Hobby Stocks, Scott Dolby over Dustin Gulbranson. In the USRA Modified A-Main, Zach Vanderbeek over Lucas Schott. In the USRA Stock Cars, Dylan Anderson over Mitch Hoofden. And in the Tuners, Ryan Bryant over Devin Jones. Last Friday night, May 22nd, the World of Outlaw Late Models were at the Jackson Motorplex for a two-night event. In the 30-lap A-Main on Friday night, it was Ricky Weiss over Brandon Shepard. Mississippi Thunder Speedway in Fountain City, Wisconsin was also racing last Friday night, May 22nd, in the USRA B-Mod A-Main, Jim Chisholm over Parker Hale. In the A-Modified A-Main, it was Dustin Sorensen over Jake Tim. In the USRA Hobby Stock A-Main, Dustin Gulbranson over Chris Hoofden. And in the Dirt Late Model 40-lap A-Main, Jake Tim making it 2 years in a row over Jesse Glenns. Boone Speedway in Boone, Iowa was also racing last Saturday night, May 23rd, in the Mini-Mod A-Main, Zach Forrester over John Padilla. In the IMCA Hobby Stock A-Main, Dylan Nelson over Seth Butler. In the IMCA Modified A-Main, Aaron Johnson over Russ Dickerson. In the Northern Sport Mod A-Main, Doug Smith over Brayton Carter. And in the IMCA Stock Car A-Main, Devin Smith over Donovan Smith. Last Saturday night was also the finale of the World of Outlaw Late Models at the Jackson Motorplex. In the 60-lap A-Main, it was Ricky Thornton Jr. over Ricky Weiss. And last Sunday night, May 24th, the Sprint Invaders got their season going down at 34 Raceway in the 30-lap A-Main. It was Kyle Offel over Paul Niehiser.
If your classic isn't so classic, bring it into Auto Trim Design of Owatonna. We can fix the upholstery, the carpet, replace a sagging headliner, make your old car look new again, make your seats comfortable again. Whether it's a classic car, work truck, boat, or anything else that moves, we can fix the upholstery and make your ride like new. And we work on convertibles. We're located in Owatonna at 3275 Old Highway 14, 1 mile west of Walmart.
A car guy will never forget their first hot rod, Richard Petty's STP car, or Don Garlitz's Swamp Rat. If you race a car or own a car that means something to you, then CS Customs can capture those memories in a custom diecast. CS Customs are locally owned and work with you directly to get the details just right. If you're into cars, racing, or just looking for something unique for an event or your business, then you need to contact Chris Stangler at 612-965-0 2892 or see ChrisStanglersCustoms.com.
Hi, this is Jim Miskin from Miskin Auto Parts. Check out Miskin.com. You'll see all the parts available in our U-Pullet lot, new arrivals ready to part out. Plus, we can also locate those hard-to-find parts for you. Miskin Auto Parts has been buying junkers and providing parts to our customers since 1972, and we ship out parts daily. Call us today at 507-684-2100 or check us out online at Miskin.com.
Hi, this is Harvey West, and you've been listening to The Dirt Show. See you at the races.